and welcome to Ask the Mayor on WBAA. We're glad you're with us this afternoon. My guest this week is Crawfordsville Mayor Todd Martin. I'm Stan Jastrzebski, and if you've got a question for our show during the next half hour, feel free to call that in. Our telephone number, area code 765-496-1999. You can send an email to ask@wbaa.org, and you can tweet your questions at WBAA News on Twitter. Mr. Mayor, good afternoon to you. It's a nice spring day. Thanks for being with us.
Good afternoon. The sun was out a few minutes ago. It was very nice.
So let me ask, we're now less than a week away from what will be a contested GOP primary in the presidential election next Tuesday. Do you have a favorite that you're going to be voting for?
I do not, I'll be honest. I'm not real pleased with the choices that are out there before us at this point.
Any of them?
There's no one that's really grabbing my attention, no.
Did you have a favorite who is no longer in the election?
Well, I mean, I think early on when you hear names tossed around, but I found this entire process this year to be very disappointing. I guess I look at it now and think, you know, if things continue down this path, maybe we're going to end up with a third candidate in the race. I don't know what's going to happen. It's a little confusing.
You do sound a little downtrodden by the whole thing.
Well, you know, I mean, I've said all along that I think Indiana, positioned where we are in the process, leaves us certainly with a disadvantage in the entire process of selecting a president. And now we find ourselves, you know, maybe in a better position, but the choices are just not very vast. So I'm not sure.
Although this year it seems like the state makes as much difference as it has in recent memory, though, right?
Well, it looked that way a few weeks ago, but if you followed, you know, the last couple of weeks, I'm not sure that we, you know, are as relevant as we want to be.
So I was looking at the early and the absentee voting totals from around the state, and they're up in Montgomery County as they are in a lot of other counties. And I wondered if you, as a civic official, feel that there's some way you could use what appears to be somewhat increased interest in going to the polls this year to translate to local races, be it not just this year, but the next time you've got local candidates on the ballot.
Well, I think we're learning a lot this year with, you know, in our county we have new voting machines and we have the early voting and we've made this transition to vote centers. There's a lot right now that is new territory for us that we're really learning from. There's a lot of interest, you know, locally in some of the county races, and that has really fueled, I think, a really big uptick in voter turnout thus far. So I'm sure we'll learn a lot from it. It has its pros. I mean, obviously, we're getting people out. I think for candidates, I think it's created some new challenges that they've not had to work with before.
What do you mean by that?
Well, I think, you know, when you look at traditional, you know, models of how you campaign and how you get your message out to the voters, you certainly have to rethink that and create an entirely new strategy when you basically have, you know, about a month of voting in which a lot of people are voting, you know. So trying to time your message, you know, to make sure that you're getting before the voters right before Election Day has kind of changed.
Do you find that there are some constituencies out there, some voting blocks who might otherwise have been somewhat overlooked, but now people are going to those communities and canvassing for votes there because they realize that turnout is up and that those greater numbers of voters could mean anything can happen?
I don't think, I've not really seen that, you know, campaigns are specifically targeting areas thinking before that they wouldn't vote, now that they will. I do think we are targeting voters to make sure that they have the opportunity to get out and vote. So you'll see the vote centers, we've had some dates set, and I don't know all of them, in which they've taken vote centers to some of the smaller towns. And, you know, for example, for a few hours on a Saturday, they can come in and vote. So there's definitely been a move to target those communities and make sure those people have the opportunity to easily get in and vote. But I've not seen anyone alter who they are targeting based on that. I think it's what I'm seeing is it's much more challenging to get your message out effectively when you know that, you know, people are, it's like Election Day for a whole month, so it's tough.
You mentioned that Montgomery County is now a vote center county, and I wonder if you have seen the same phenomenon that I've seen in other places, especially counties where you've got one larger city and then a number of smaller outlying communities within rural areas, kind of the way Tippecanoe County is set up and Montgomery County is set up and Monroe County and a bunch of others. What's happened in some of these places is that there has been contentious discussion and debate over where to place those vote center locations. Have you noticed that going on in your area?
We did not really have any contention in the decision here. However, I think we might see that as that's revisited in upcoming elections. There might be some input that maybe people didn't like the way they were placed. I have concerns that it's tough for some people to get to some of those places. It certainly changes things when you go from having the neighborhood voting area to now getting to one of these centralized locations. So I've not seen it yet, but I'm sure there might be some questions raised as we move forward.
One of the big selling points of the vote center model since it was introduced several years ago is that it is supposed to save counties money. Have you heard at all whether it is saving Montgomery County money?
I'm not sure. I don't have access to that right now, but I can't help but think as you compare operating all those polling places and all the poll workers and all those places, I'm sure it'll save us money in the end. There's no doubt in my mind.
So, of course, you've just hit upon the other side of that, which is you have fewer polling places, and then it's harder to parcel them out to the small towns who can feel somewhat overlooked, I think, anyhow. So what is the balance there? What are you hearing from people in terms of access versus the amount of money they want spent versus, I know some people who have been to the same polling precinct, the same school or church or something in their neighborhood for years and years and years, and that's taken away in some respects, taken away that feeling of civic engagement, knowing exactly where you're going to go, in some cases knowing exactly what poll worker you're going to talk to. What are people feeling as this change goes on? Are they trying to accept the new way of doing it because more and more Indiana counties are doing this all the time, or are they feeling nostalgic for the way it used to be that they may now have lost in some cases?
I myself am not hearing much, not getting much feedback on that. Keeping in mind that this is a county election and not necessarily a city. So if it was a city election, I probably would be prone to hear more direct input. But I have concerns, and I know especially for elderly this can be challenging. They want that option close to home. I think we're just going to have to feel our way through this first time, but I know that the turnout is already up significantly, so if that's any indication, people seem to be adapting well.
There can, of course, also be some unintended consequences of big turnout, especially in local races if they are on the same ballot as big national or state races. And I find that some people may know more about the presidential candidates because they have much more advertising money than they would about, say, county council or county commissioners. So is there at all a worry in a year like this where you've got lots and lots of advertising from the presidential candidates, you've got the new model of voting there, that it will have any sort of screwy effects on the local races?
Well, we all look back, we all sit back and look at that and wonder if something like that might happen. I think in our community, what I have seen, people have access to really a great deal of information on the local races. So I feel like people, there's certainly been no shortage of dialogue this election season. Both newspapers have done a nice job. The radio stations, we've had forums, we've had a lot of engagement with the public. So, and of course, if you pick up anything in this community, you will see political advertisements, at every turn. So I think people have been exposed and have a lot of information at their fingertips. I don't think, in our case, that the national races are overshadowing what's going on locally.
You and I have talked a lot, especially since you getting the Stellar designation, about how you want to be attracting young people, attracting tech-savvy young professionals. And it occurs to me to ask you about social media and how it is playing into this election cycle. Have you noticed that there have been more candidates who have been striking out on Facebook and Twitter and Snapchat and Vine and whatever else, trying to elicit votes? I guess the follow-up question to that is, isn't that what you want to have happen? You want to have people embracing that technology because it looks good for the city if they're engaging with their electorate in that way.
We see quite a bit of use of social media. I know that, you know, most of the candidates are, they may be behind in what the younger people are using. So, you know, when you have candidates using Facebook and the 20-somethings are not using Facebook anymore, that could create some challenges. Social media has certainly been active this season, you know, and unfortunately it at times erodes into discourse that's probably a little less civil than what we would like. We've seen some of that happen as well. So, you know, it's all new territory, and everybody's working with it, I think, trying to figure out how they best get their message across without it becoming something that erodes into non-productive discourse. So I think every candidate in these races has a Facebook page. I'm not sure how many are using the other platforms, but that's certainly out there.
This is Ask the Mayor on WBAA. We're chatting today with Crawfordsville Mayor Todd Barton, and we'd love to have your questions for him. You can call in during the show. 496-1999 is the telephone number. Send your emailed questions to ask@WBAA.org or tweet them at WBAA News on Twitter, speaking of social media. I wanted to ask you also about some of the discussion on the local level. There was a question posed at a forum to some county council candidates asking whether they could prove they were, quote-unquote, quote, real Republicans. And that's an interesting question because it strikes me as one you don't get asked a lot if there aren't big top ticket races on the ballot. Does it feel that way to you that the questioning has changed in this election cycle?
You know, I think that's, you know, we see that question come out and I think it's just indicative of the broader discussion that we're having in this community right now, because undoubtedly there's been a shift and a split within the local Republican Party. And so that leads people to ask, you know, which segment of this split is the real Republican Party? And then that question gets asked quite a bit. And both fragments there will tell you that they are the true Republicans and that they represent the true Republican values and the platform. But, you know, in the end, when you boil it all down and you look at the platform and you look at, you know, any kind of test, I guess you would want to apply, you know, nobody truly 100% fits the mold. You know, people are complex and they have complex views on issues. So, you know, they might be able to check off 8 out of 10 boxes or 7 out of 10 boxes, but somebody who checks off all 10 is probably a rarity.
When you say there's been a split in the local Republican Party, what do you mean?
Well, you know, I mean, this has been going on for a while, in which, you know, certainly a group to the far right associated with kind of the Tea Party movement, if you will, made a play a few years ago, and the current Republican Party chair is more aligned with that group, and so, you know, there's been a lot of contention in the Republican primaries and in the Republican process for a few years here, and we're seeing that come to the head because this is the season in which we're going to elect all new precinct people, Republican precinct people for our county. So the direction and the leadership of the Republican Party will be largely decided in this primary.
Well, so I've talked with you enough, I feel like, to say confidently that you're a fairly moderate guy. Does that worry you?
No, I'm very comforted by that fact because I feel like we're going to have the opportunity. And I wrote I expressed my opinion, I guess, this week in the local newspapers. But now is our chance to really inject some common sense approach to what we're doing. And I think the party leadership will be brought back more in line with where it needs to be and really something in line with what the community really, really thinks and what they really want to see happen.
So the other question that's been asked is whether local Republicans would support whoever the eventual nominees are. And I assume that includes, would you support, say, Donald Trump or Ted Cruz if they get the nomination? Well, so you're obviously a prominent Republican in Montgomery County. Is answering that question even important?
Well, I don't think it's important as far as what we're doing on a local level. I think it's probably a fair question to be asked. I don't, I'm not going to try to dodge that, but I don't think it really determines how well we're going to do in you know, shaping the future of our very community right here. You know, and I have to slice that from a couple of different ways. I have to think about it, you know, not only with my personal beliefs and where I want to see the country head, but I also have to gauge what I think an administration from any of these candidates will do that will impact our community right here. And you know, that's an effect that takes a while for you to absorb, but we certainly feel the effects of any administration at some point and their views on different topics and how they regulate states and then ultimately regulate local communities.
Well, I think one of the things you're getting at is that history shows both major parties, I think at all levels of government, from the local to the most national, have at some point nominated some real duds as nominees, including for president.
Absolutely.
So shouldn't it be, especially at a time where you've got this split you're talking about within your party there, shouldn't it be okay for someone to say, no, I think candidate X or candidate Y is not going to do what we need, and therefore I don't think they're worth supporting now or ever?
I think that's fair. I think that's fair, and I think, you know, for the average voter or the average person who identifies themselves as a Republican or as a Democrat, they certainly should have that option to come along and say, you know, I know they're the nominee of my party, but I personally don't agree with you know, whatever, and you know, my allegiance is not there. I think that's perfectly acceptable. That's a little more difficult, obviously, when you're an elected official within a party. But again, from my perspective, and I say this all the time, the answer really, usually you find it in the middle of the road somewhere. And what we're seeing, I think, happen on the national level is that pendulum effect. And we'll see it swing pretty far to the left, then pretty far to the right, and back and forth trying to correct itself. And I think that's what we're seeing play out right now. I just try to take an approach in local government of trying to, you know, research, get the facts, apply the data. Let's make some good common sense decisions on moving our community forward and not really get caught up in political ideology.
We've got about 10 minutes left with Crawfordsville Mayor Todd Barton today on Ask the Mayor. Call in your questions to area code 765-496-1999. Send an email to ask@wbaa.org or tweet your questions at WBAA News on Twitter. Okay, on to other things. I noticed that there's still no information on the city's website about the Human Rights Commission. Is there a timeline for getting that posted and getting people more engaged in that process?
There is. I've been working through a process of interviewing people. I actually had another interview a couple of days ago with a candidate. I just want to make sure that I find the right people, the right diverse mix of people to really put in that commission to do a good job. You know, tomorrow is the deadline for things to be on the May Council agenda, so I'm not sure I'm going to make that, but definitely by June, I will have all those interviews wrapped up and have, I think, a very solid group to take forth to the council to recommend for their approval to get that commission back up and running.
It seems like one of the things that you would have to weigh is not just having a diversity of membership in terms of the optics of reconstituting this board, but also trying to get a sense of the people themselves and how they might work together if you put them in the same room on
a
monthly basis.
Absolutely. I mean, that's a lot of what I'm trying to work through. It is really about finding people, and for me, who are solution-driven and who are compromise-driven, who can sit down and have good, productive discussions and find productive, positive ways to address challenges and move our community forward. And I do that with any board. If someone, you know, they're hell-bent on their position, and that's that, and no compromise, and it has to be this way, they're probably not the right fit for that situation.
You and I talked a couple months ago on the program about the city's website, and you said that you were having a hard time trying to find a single point person to make sure that everything got posted and that it was kind of being distributed out to a number of different departments to kind of do it little by little here and there. Is that still the case, or are you making any headway to try to get somebody to be in charge of that very public portal for the city?
We are making headway, and we've assigned that ultimately to our communications person to oversee that. Now, single bits of information still get posted by different people, obviously, but we have streamlined that, and he is taking the point on that. So I don't think we're up 100% where we want to be, but I think it has improved dramatically.
Could this be a way that you could engage some of the young, tech-savvy millennials that you're hoping through Stellar and other things to try to attract? Because it seems like the electronic position of the city and the way that you are forward facing out to the community online is something that would be right in line with those kinds of people.
No, it absolutely is. And a website is only one piece of it. And depending on who you ask, I mean, that is kind of fading away. I mean, they're looking more at the social media and some of those other avenues. But you still have to have a good, solid website with robust information and accurate information. And it just takes more work than I think than most people realize to keep that fresh and current and really active and you know, interactive.
Well, and I agree with you, and I know from running news websites that existing in that digital space has to be made a priority or people just mm-hmm. won't
Absolutely.
Do it.
Absolutely.
Especially if your employees aren't all digital savvy millennial types. Are
right.
you able right now to make it the priority you think it needs to be for the city?
We are. And in one of the projects for this summer, for one of our interns will be to really get in there and dig in that website and find ways to make it more interactive. And once they create a process and streamline it, we can put it with our permanent employees and make sure that it's being kept up the way it should. You're exactly right. They can quickly be pushed aside, the website, and become an afterthought if you're not careful. And that's something that we have to work very hard to avoid. And most of our employees are not of that young tech-savvy generation. Our interns are, and they do a very nice job of helping us along with that process.
So one of the questions I thought about was, we talked earlier about the messaging that goes on in an election year. And one of the things you hear all the time from people is we want smaller government. And that is a common thing you see in political advertisements in Indiana. I can't help but wonder if you've gotten any pressure from folks who say, hey, how can you have smaller government if you're hiring all these people to do social media and do your web stuff? You're just creating more and more government employees. Has anyone come
right,
to you and,
right.
and express that concern?
Well, we don't hire people just to do those things. You know, I mean, those duties get assigned to somebody with another role. So, you know, for example, our communications person also does code enforcement, which, you know, this time of year takes the bulk of his time. We have to stay lean. Now, that's not to say we've not added some people in city government. We have, because we just simply can't keep up. And I made the case with the city council, and they went along with me that, you know, when you look at the priorities of the public, they want a clean community, and they want good, accurate communication. So we added a position to do those things, combined it into one. So it is always a balance of keeping government small and lean and efficient, yet providing the services that people want and probably expect today. It's a balancing act at all times.
So it sounds like you probably could not go back to the council and say, I'd like to hire someone to just be in charge of our social media.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to work. I mean, I think that's a tough case to make. Now, to say that maybe we hire somebody part-time to do that and things like that, possibly, but we're not to the point where we can have somebody solely working on communications. We have to combine that with something else.
I wanted to spend our last couple of minutes talking about something that it feels like it's been months since you and I chatted about, and that's Amtrak. Have you had any more talks recently about improving that service, either with state officials or folks from Iowa Pacific? What's the latest you're hearing?
Well, we just actually had an update today via email that our numbers are really good right now. We're getting constant feedback, and I'm getting feedback from local residents here who've ridden the Hoosier State that it's going very well. And we certainly will start to look at how we move forward here pretty soon. And those are conversations that will involve all the communities, NDOT, the legislature, and then the private partners. So, you know, right now we're just trying to make sure what we're doing is right, and we're learning a lot from that process. We know that, for example, ridership, was down a little bit in March compared to a year ago, but revenue was up. So you have to kind of crunch those numbers and try to figure out what that means. But I think one thing that is especially important to me, our on-time performance through April 27th of this year for this year is 92.9%. That is dramatically better than where we were at just a few years ago. So we're making significant progress, and I think it's going very well.
wanted to stick in one quick caller question. We had a caller call in wanting to know if you guys at the county are tracking how much your money you're saving on the vote center model. I know this is still relatively new to Montgomery County, but is there a mechanism in place? I think this person wants to know to see how much you're saving monetarily.
Well, the vote centers are administered by the county, not the city, so I probably can't answer it with absolute authority, but I feel pretty sure that they're going to know what this cost in the past, and they're going to be able to tell us what it costs this time. So I'm sure there will be some mechanism to compare what we were doing versus what we're doing now when it's all over.
Okay, back to Amtrak for just a second here. About a year ago at this time, you and I had a conversation where they were right on the cusp, one of the many times it looked like it was very close to dying altogether if there was not funding or if the service didn't improve significantly. And Iowa Pacific since has promised lots of additional amenities to get ridership up. You just said ridership was down, but revenue was up. So it seems like Iowa Pacific has at some point been trying new things and at other points just trying to keep the lights on and trying to keep the thing moving. What's your sense of how successful they're being?
Ridership was down in March. I mean, overall, it's up. We just saw a little bit of a, you know, a slight dip March from this year compared to March of last year. So overall, ridership is up and revenue is up and on-time performance is up. I think it's a complicated relationship. And Indiana put themselves out there on the forefront in creating this model in which we involve Amtrak crews, Iowa Pacific equipment. It gets pretty complex, and there's a lot of little things that can go wrong in that, and we've had to feel our way through that, but I feel confident we're there. I think Iowa Pacific has done a pretty good job, I think, in operating the train. If there's any place that maybe that we've not, you know, been 100% and maybe in marketing and promoting what we're doing, and I know they've always been kind of reluctant to really be very aggressive with that until they were confident they had, you know, this up and running and the bugs were worked out. But we're at that point now. So, you know, it's just a matter of really promoting this and educating the public about what is out there and what the options are like.
They also talked about having, for instance, special trains to serve the universities that are along the route. That hasn't happened yet. Should we be optimistic for that to happen, disappointed that it hasn't?
There's two factors there that will regulate that most people don't understand. And the first is, I mean, obviously somebody has to pay for that. And so we can think about that and move through that. But I think probably the most complicating factor is that we can't just put these passenger trains on the freight rails without, you know, a buy-in from, in this case, CSX, Norfolk Southern, and those railroads. So it's not as easy as saying we're going to run another train. We need buy-in from them, and we need their blessings to make that happen. So that is not a very easy process to move through, and it's something we'll have to do over time.
All right. Well, Mr. Mayor, we have run out of time on this program, but thanks as always to you, and we'll look forward to doing this again next month.
Thank you very much.
Remember, you can find all of these programs at our website, WBAA.org, and you can send in your questions for next week's show with West Lafayette Mayor John Dennis. The email address for that, ask@WBAA.org. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Support for Ask the Mayor on WBAA comes from your membership and Butler, Fairman & Seifert, a civil engineering firm providing communities with professional expertise and guidance. Butler, Fairman & Seifert, civil engineering solutions for better communities. BFSENGR.com. And Encompass Credit Union, supporting Ask the Mayor and offering a full line of financial services to the people of Clinton and Tipton counties while supporting the communities they serve. More information at EncompassCU.org.